Dr. Alan D. Steinman, the Alan Helen Hunting Director, Annis Water Resources Institute. Great things. Look out your back window there, Dr. Steinman. Pretty day?
It's a little cloudy right now in Muskegon, but like you said, the forecast is for things to get sunnier as the day goes on, and we're in the middle of bike time in Muskegon, so they expect 20 to 25,000 motorcycles here this weekend.
Gonna be
very exciting.
Going to be like a celebrity rider or anything?
No, I think I'm going to be a spectator. Thank you very much.
Just checking. We want to talk about the Institute. First of all, remind me again why the Annis Water Resources Institute exists.
We exist to protect, preserve, and restore the water resources in our region, and we do that by integrating research, education, and outreach.
Topics to be discussed. Let's begin. Algal growth, limiting nutrients for this in Spring Lake. What's up with this?
Well, as you may recall, in Spring Lake they used to have really high algal problems, massive blooms, really, you know, soup pea green kind of stuff. And then in 2005, we did an alum application, aluminum sulfate, which kind of binds the phosphorus in place in the sediment so that no phosphorus can leach out of the sediments, what we call internal loading. And it's worked really well for the last 10 years or so. The algal blooms have been down. Phosphorus concentrations have been down considerably. But last year we did an assessment after 11 years, and the phosphorus levels have started to come back up, which is not surprising. You know, normally these alum treatments have a 5 to 10 year lifespan, so we're at the end of that lifespan, and things, it's probably losing some of its effectiveness. It's probably become saturated with phosphorus, the aluminum binding sites. So as a consequence, we're looking at whether another alum application might be in store or whether some other mitigation strategies need to be done. And one of the things that we're interested in is so much phosphorus has gotten into this lake over the years. It's possible that the algae have more phosphorus than they need, and at this point their growth may be limited by another resource, and it could be nitrogen. So we're doing a study off of a dock of one of the homeowners who has kindly lent us access to the lake and to his dock to basically do an experimental manipulation where we take these large containers and we fill them with Spring Lake water, and then some of them we add phosphorus to, some we add nitrogen to, and some we add nitrogen and phosphorus to together. And then we incubate them in the lake for a week. And then after the week, we harvest them and see how the algae has done relative to these different nutrient treatments. And this is actually part of a PhD dissertation being done by a visiting scientist from China, Xiaomei Su, who's in our lab this year. And so she'll also be looking at how much of those potential toxins that the blue-green algae release, cyanotoxins, are produced in each of these treatments as well. So we just finished the experiment, and we're starting to look at the analyses and see whether there is an impact. The initial data, very anecdotally, suggests that it's the nitrogen and phosphorus treatment that generates most of the response, which suggests from a management strategy what we need to do is we need to manage both the nitrogen and the phosphorus. We can't focus on just one nutrient, but we need to look at both nutrients. And I suspect this is probably not unique to Spring Lake. It probably applies to a lot of the lakes in our region that have had too many nutrients over time. Whether they're connected to Lake Michigan as these drowned river mouth lakes like Spring Lake is through the Grand River, or whether they're inland lakes that historically had small cottages on them, with septic systems, and as those cottages have been torn down and replaced by much larger houses, and you get more people visiting during the summer months, but you still have the same septic field to deal with the nutrients, more and more nutrients are getting into these lakes, and we're seeing more and more problems emerge.
Anything the community can do on this?
Well, I think, you know, obviously there are things that people can do if they live on the lake, and if they're on septic systems, it really behooves them to maintain them. I think a lot of people just ignore them until there's a problem, but, you know, they should be pumped out every 3 to 5 years. More frequently, obviously, if they're getting heavily used, that's probably the best thing that can be done. And then ultimately, in some cases, like with Silver Lake, you know, the lake up north of us that we studied the last few years, I think they're ultimately going to have to go to sewers. There's just, with the amount of use that they get, and the amount of population growth that they get right now, the septic systems are totally overwhelmed. And the only long-term solution, if they want to maintain the health of that lake, is that you need to bite the bullet. And it's not cheap. I mean, that's the reality. It's very expensive. But when you compare that to the loss of the water quality in the lake and perhaps the economic losses that would be associated with that, then the sewers become actually an economically viable alternative.
Dr. Alan Steinman with us again, wrapping up some key happenings in our backyard when it comes to what's on the docket with the Anniswater Resources Institute. How about Asian carp beyond the electrical barrier?
Yeah, a fish was found about 9 miles. This is below the barrier, through the barrier, and about 9 miles away from Lake Michigan, just upstream of Lake Calumet, where Asian carp was found about 10 years ago. If you may recall, just a single individual then, and a single individual now. What the Army Corps of Engineers does is that they actually contract with local fishermen, and they send out gill nets on a periodic basis to survey to see whether any of the carp have gotten through. And even though for many years they had no hits, now they got a hit a couple of weeks ago, a male fish. They're not sure whether it actually got through the barrier or whether, you know, somebody may have tossed it in. There's all sorts of cultural reasons to do that, and then there's just stupid reasons to do that. It's unclear exactly how it got in. It's unlikely that there's a reproducing population yet, but just the fact that they find one, a live one, is obviously cause for concern. Now, we've had a lot of positive hits through the environmental DNA sampling. If you recall, that's where we take water samples and you measure the DNA in the water specific for Asian carp. And there have been positive hits in the past, but that doesn't mean that the fish are there. It could be fish scales that have floated downstream. It could be birds that have eaten fish upstream of the electrical barrier and then defecated down near Lake Michigan. And so all you're seeing are the feces from the birds that have carp remains in them. But when you find a live fish, obviously there's much greater cause for concern, which was the case here. So the USGS and Army Corps of Engineers is doing additional testing to see if they're going to find any other fish in a much more intensive way. And also they can look at the otoliths. Those are little ear bones that the fish have. And using stable isotope analyses, very sophisticated analyses, they can determine or at least estimate where the fish came from. And once that otolith chemistry analysis is done, we'll have a better idea of whether that fish has actually been living upstream of the barrier the entire time or whether it somehow got in from another spot. So, but that'll be a couple of months before those data come in.
Great. Well, we'll keep you accountable for that data when it comes in, as it's a serious conversation.
Absolutely.
Speaking of fish, in a less serious, I hope, the Shedd Aquarium staff's in town.
Yeah, it was exciting. They were doing a retreat up here in West Michigan, and they wanted a trip, so we took them out on the DJ Angus, showed them Spring Lake and showed them Lake Michigan. They had a great time, and we're hoping that this will end up evolving into a collaboration between AWRI and the Shedd Aquarium. We Carl Reitz, our fisheries biologist, takes this fish biology class down there every year as part of a field trip. But Shedd is actually very interested in perhaps building their own boat and running cruises out of Chicago, out of Navy Pier. But they don't want to bite the bullet of the cost of a boat quite yet, and they're interested in perhaps leasing RWG Jackson to go down there for a week or two and run cruises out of there with the Shedd Aquarium staff and see if that makes sense for them. So we'll investigate whether that's feasible or not, and maybe next summer we'll be having some kind of formal announcement about a collaboration. Devil's in the details, as we always talk about. But it certainly was an excellent cruise, and we had some excellent exchange of information and just a real feel-good kind of trip.
That's great. Last but not least, the Alan and Helen Hunting gift to AWRI. What do you think? Should we discuss this now?
Yeah, we can discuss this. At the GVSU Enrichment Dinner last month, the Huntings were awarded the Enrichment Dinner Award for their, you know, generosity throughout the years to GVSU, but in particular, they have made a gift to AWRI in the amount of $2.25 million, so a very significant gift, and obviously one that we're very, very happy about and very pleased and very thankful for. As a consequence, my directorship is now named after them, which I am more than happy to do, and it sets up a research and innovation fund here at the Institute that is really will be used once it's funded to look at really cutting-edge research, high-risk, high-reward kind of activities that it's very hard to get funding agencies to support because they like to have, they just tend to be more conservative because they want to see results. And so to get the kind of money to do these kind of high-risk projects is really hard. So having this kind of an endowment fund set up for us gives us the opportunity to do this kind of stuff. So it's very exciting. You know, Alan and Helen have just been incredibly supportive. They're very modest individuals. They don't even like the recognition. You know, I was joking with Alan before the enrichment dinner, where he wanted to get some ideas about topics that he could talk about and some of the issues that are of greatest concern here in the Great Lakes. And it was clear that he was totally sandbagging me, because during his talk, he was just absolutely compelling. And, you know, everybody was on their feet. So yeah, I could use him as a spokesperson for us whenever he's available. He was fantastic.
Well, I'll always be introducing you as Dr. Alan D. Steinman, the Alan and Helen Hunting Director.
I'm pleased to have that title.
That's great. All right, what else do we need to know when it comes to your July update, Alan?
Well, I think, you know, we continue to move forward. Obviously, for those people who have been following the news, GLRI has been put back into the budget by Congress at the full $300 million. So we're very excited about that. That'll help the Great Lakes. It'll help Michigan. It'll help Grand Valley State University. And so we are very grateful to our legislative members for the support for this, which they have shown throughout this whole process. So it's really very pleasing.
Awesome. Everything we discuss can be continued to be discussed with you. How best to do that?
You can contact us. You can look at our website. That's probably the easiest way, at www.gvsu.edu/WRI. Or you can give us a call at 616-331-3749.
Great. Dr. Steinman, thanks. See you soon.
Thank you, Shelley. Take care.